Okay, we are now at week 3.5, so to speak, or 3.25 of Lifnim Bishuras Hadin. And this is it for the in-person discussions. After that, I'll just make a recording of whatever's left, but Sammy, God willing, will begin shiur next week. We started our story, and if you have the story sheet, you see I actually put it on the story sheet itself in order to try to assist. We started with the story from Bava Metzia Pei Gimel Amud Aleph, in which porters broke barrels belonging to Rabbi Bar Bar Hanna. Rabbi Bar Bar Hanna is very angry. I'm assuming he's angry. He takes their cloaks as payment for the barrels. They go to complain to Rav, and Rav says to him, the statement from Rav is that you're supposed to give them back their cloaks, and he says, is that the law? And the answer in our edition is yes, and he quotes in the pasuk in Mishlei, Laman Telech V'Derech Tovim, you have to go in the path of the good. And then they complain, you know, we worked all day, we're starving, we need to be paid for our day's work. The moral of the story is you should have broken the barrels in the beginning of the day. But they apparently, you know, put in a good day's work and then smashed the barrels. So once again, Rav says, you have to pay them. Dina Hachi, is that the rule? You bet. Ba'orchas Tzadikim Tishmor, the rest of the pasuk from Mishlei, you have to guard the paths of the righteous. So we had a nice debate about whether there was pshia involved. Was there carelessness involved or not? If there was carelessness on their part, why in the world are you paying them? If there wasn't carelessness on their part, why don't they just swear and collect? I'm leaving that all on the side. It doesn't relate to where we're going with this. We noted that according to Rashi, this is a Lifnim Mishuras Hadin case. Whereas according to Tosfos, it is not. Tosfos on Daf Chaf Dalet said that in the event that you're suffering a loss, number one, in order to do this, as happened here, Rabbi was harmed, and number two, in the event that in the event that you're suffering a loss, and in the event that nobody in your position would be obligated to do this, it's not that you have a personal exemption, but no one will be obligated. That's not a Lifnim Bishuras Hadin case. That's why Rav uses Psukim from Mishlei instead of using Psukim that we know we associate with Lifnim Bishuras Hadin, specifically the Yasun from Parshas Yisro. So as it says, this is basically Chesed. We highlighted a few factors from the case that were important to note. Number one, maybe Rabbi Bar Bar Hanna has a unique duty as an Amora to help them out. We're going to come back to that a little bit today. That's number one. Number two, maybe there's unique responsibility because the porters are needy people, and that, you know, bends this towards a Chesed thing. We'll come back to that as well today. We also noted that Rav's choice of a pasuk from Mishlei may reflect the idea that this is Chesed Nadin as per Tosfos. We offer that the case may actually be part din and part chesed, which is why Rav gives the answer in two different segments, and Rabbi Bar Bar Hanna thinks maybe I need to give them back their coats but not pay them. Maybe giving them back their coats is the Lifnim Bishuras Hadin as din part, and paying them is the chesed element. We had support from the Shulchan Aruch HaRav and others for that idea. We asked, is Rav saying you have to do this? I thought Lifnim Bishuras Hadin was beyond the letter of the law. That's not a legal obligation at all. And we suggested that our case might be unique. Whether it's unique because he's an Amora, we also threw out the idea that maybe Lifnim Bishuras Hadin means by rights, by law, the recipient doesn't have any claim on it. However, there's still a legal obligation on the part of the person who is doing it to actually carry it out. I thought that was a possible explanation. I haven't seen anyone say that, but I think that's an interesting possibility. It answers for some of our problems. Finally, we challenged Rav on three different levels. We asked Avedaso Kodemes, your stuff comes first. Why in the world should you require that he take care of somebody else? And our answer was to say, because we're told you're not supposed to always carry that out. So Rav is saying, break the practice right now. We asked, you are exempt from, or if you're exempt from a responsibility, then you don't have any further obligations, and if you take them on, you're called a hedyot. You're not supposed to take on chumras. You're not supposed to sit in the sukkah in the rain. You're not supposed to say kriya shema when you are exempt. And we said that that doesn't necessarily apply here. Whether it doesn't apply here because whether it doesn't apply here because it's been Adam L'Chavero, or whether it doesn't apply here because other people would be obligated to do it. And then finally, Rav Sami was very angry. You are encouraging carelessness. You're gonna push people into doing this. And we sort of shrugged and saying, yeah. We brought some sources to indicate you're right, that we don't try to encourage this sort of thing. But then in the end, we said, nonetheless, be a good guy and pay them. We then moved away from the discussion about the particular case on Daf Pei Gimel, and we asked a global question, what is Lifnei Mishuras Hadin? And condensing what we said last week, Tosfos, we said, says that Lifnei Mishuras Hadin applies where the other party has a claim and loses because of some point in the case. You have a tour for some reason, but that makes it more like a din situation. It's where there was a claim. It's just that it doesn't apply to you. Like Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi with the wood would be one example of that. Whereas Rashi seems to be more fuzzy. Rashi is willing to apply with Lifnei Mishuras Hadin in cases like the Porter case, where no one would have a claim. The Porters have no claim in court. If you brought that claim to court, pay me, right? I smashed your barrels. You'd get laughed out of court. No offense, Jeffrey. So he said, Rashi calling it Lifnei Mishuras Hadin really is applying it as more of a chesed thing than anything else. We then asked, is Lifnei Mishuras Hadin a mitzvah? So we said, if it's chesed, it's a mitzvah, but it's not a deoraisa. Like the Rambam in Hilchos Avot, Perek Yedalet Halacha Aleph, the idea that v'ahavta l'rayecha kamocha is a deoraisa, but all the sub things that we learn from it, including the examples that Yisro gives in the pasuk, Pikacholim, and so on, are all considered derabanans. However, if it's din, some say it is a mitzvah. However, not from Ya'asun in Parshas Yisro. That's more of a chesed pasuk, as seen from the fact that we bring Bikracholim and others in, that are derabanans in it, but also the fact that it's just part of Yisro trying to say, hey, this is how the nation will have shalom if they follow this. It's not a halachic statement. Apologize, there's a mistake on the sheet where I did the review. It says Yisro, it should say Yitro. But that was number one. Sorry. Number two was a possibility. Certainly Rashi thinks Basisa Yashvatov is a basis for Lifnei Mishuras Hadin, and we said that maybe Ramban takes that approach as well. And I know that Halachta Bidrachav is a very weird idea to say would be the source here. Nonetheless, we're told that Hashem wants to act with Nimbi Shura Sadin, and we have the idea from Rivinus and Ibishitz and the Aras Dvash that in fact you could argue that V'alach to Bidrachav is somehow an imperative for Lifnei Mishuras Sadin. Okay, that's our brief summary of where we've been. We have another argument to bring to say that Lifnei Mishuras Sadin may be a quasi mitzvah. It may be a quasi-biblical mitzvah. That's what we're going to say right now. Before we move into the question of, so what exactly did Rav do, and can you coerce people to do it? Lifnei Mishuras Hadin, and when can you coerce, which is going to be the bulk of our conversation. But I think it's really important to understand this quasi-deoraisa idea here. And this begins for us with the idea formulated by Rabbeinu Yehonasan in the Shita Mekubetzes. If you take a look at Source Aleph on your sheet, the Mishnah in Bava Kama describes a situation in which you have two people who are walking along holding barrels. One of them is holding a barrel of wine, one of them is holding a barrel of honey. Key point, difference in viscosity between the wine and the honey, such that if the barrel of honey breaks and the honey is dripping out, you can empty your barrel of wine and then use the wine to catch the honey before the honey is all disappears. I'm not going into the discussion of Chavis versus Kad. You can read the Gemara there for that discussion. The point is that the barrel of honey cracks open, and the owner of the wine dumps out his wine and saves the honey using his empty barrel. So the rule is Ein lo ela scharo. The Mishnah in Bava Kama says you get paid for the clay. You get paid for your action of saving his honey, but you're not getting reimbursed for your wine. That's your loss. However, Im Amar, if you said, Atzla Shalchaba Tanosli Dme Shali, if you said before saving his stuff and before dumping out your stuff, you said, I'll save your stuff if you'll pay me for my wine, then the honey owner is going to have to pay you for the wine. That's the Mishnah in Bava Kama, Kuftez Vav Amid Aleph, over onto Amid Beis, it's in the 10th parak. So Rabbeinu Yehonah's son addresses this this Mishnah, which you see brought in source base. He says, the honey owner is able to say, you were just doing a mitzvah. You did lifnim mishuras hadin. The honey owner can say, don't expect me to pay for the wine. That was your mitzvah you were doing. Because we've learned, really, your own stuff comes first. Don't hold me responsible for the decision you made. Lifnim mishuras hadin asisa, you went beyond the letter of the law. Uschar mitzvahs b'hei amaleka. And guess what? There's no reward for the mitzvah in this world. However, if he told him in advance, yeah, it's a mitzvah, but I'm not doing it unless you pay me. You pay me for my wine, then I'll pour out the wine, but otherwise I'm not doing it. Russia, he's allowed to do that. He is able to stipulate that in advance. Rav Sami, you have a question? Okay. Bim Tomar, but you might ask, in Hisne Imo Pshita, if you made a condition, obviously that's so. If you said to him in advance, you have to pay me for my stuff, and otherwise, nothing doing, Tzricha Lamemer, the Tanai Mamon Huvekayam. Do you need to actually say that this is a kedizah in it? This is the deal. You made a deal. So he says, Yesh Lomar, you could say, Hakamash Mulan, Davidas of Avedas Chaber with the Shalom Kodemes. You could say that it's teaching me the rule that my stuff comes first. That could have been, in fact, what you were trying to teach me. You were trying to teach me that my stuff comes first. Inami, in other words, that the owner of the wine, in fact, would have been able to walk away. Inami, alternatively, and this is the key for our discussion, and I'm going to say it outside after all of that build-up, because I know that people get confused as they read what he says here. So I'm going to say it outside. You can see how it fits the wording. He says, I might have argued that lifnim mishuras hadin is a requirement upon him, because the Torah says asher yaasun, and the Gemara deduces from that that's lifnim mishuras hadin, and therefore it's not a choice at all. And the answer is that no, we don't compel people for lifnim mishuras hadin. Why don't we force people for lifnim mishuras hadin? Because it's what we call a mitzvah shematan schara betzida. It's a mitzvah for which the Torah tells you you're getting rewarded. And the general rule is we don't coerce people to do a mitzvah where the Torah says you're getting rewarded. And he says it is like hidur mitzvah. Kidur amrinan. If you see where I bolded, hidur mitzvah ad shlish b'mitzvah. The rule for hidur mitzvah, for beautifying a mitzvah, is that you're supposed to pay up to one third of the mitzvah in order to embellish it. I'm getting a note that my audio is fuzzy and goes in and out. That's reflecting what people are hearing? Okay, so hold on 1 second, and I'm going to do what I believe will improve it. Okay. So, yeah, let me know if it continues to be a problem. We're good? Okay. Thanks. So, again, he says, this is like hit or mitzvah, where we're told, pay up to one-third. Beyond one-third, it's rewarded from Hashem in this world. After one-third, so you'll be rewarded before one-third, it's rewarded by Hashem in the next world. Hayom la'sosam, not hayom li'tol scharam. So, the point is, and the statement that he's making, is that lifnim mishuras hadin could be looked at as a form of hidur mitzvah. You are beautifying a mitzvah. That's what you're doing when you do lifnim mishuras hadin. And therefore, you can't be compelled to do it because Hidur mitzvah has matan schar betzida. The Torah says the reward for it. Yes, Rosami.
What does this have to do with hidur mitzvah?
So that's the question: is what? How did hidur mitzvah get in there? What are you talking about? So I'm not really sure, honestly, that this is actually. I'm not. As you read his words, I'm not convinced that he's saying this is hidur mitzvah. But I can see why everybody thinks it is. Meaning, if you look at his wording, otherwise, where is lifnim mishuras hadin matan schar betzida? If he's not saying it is hidur mitzvah, then I don't understand his point. So I understand that, but what is he talking about? So first of all, the essay I quoted last week from the Rav on halachic morality, actually it's from the same book, it's a different, this is the essay called Halachic Morality in the book called Halachic Morality. So if you take a look at the parts that I brought you here, halachic law is the, he's distinguishing between law and the Pnimi Shuras Adin. So he says, halachic law is the product of the divine logos ethos activity. The latter resulted in the emergence of a theoretical normative system in a body of ideas or nomoi, nomoi being the law. If it didn't make any sense to you, clearly, you know, you got to go back to school. But it's not going to affect your ability to follow what comes next. Halachic morality, on the other hand, was born from the great God experience. Law is from law, Hashem told you something. Morality, and what he means here is, lefnim bishuras hadin, as you'll see, comes from experiencing God. Divine reason is the source of the law. Divine romance is the source of morality. Whoever has seen the real and perfect is determined to be real and perfect too, since in his eyes, imitating is the only way in which he can commune with the real and the perfect. This is my God, and I will be like him, mahu afani, as he is, so shall I be. He says, it's about, the finisher as hadin is about emulating God. That's the idea, and I see that I actually didn't bring the key words in the quote. Oh well, if you go back to halachic morality, you'll see he also invokes there's a keli van vehu. Yeah, but I skipped the part where he actually brings the words zekeli van vehu right before this is my God. He actually has the words zekeli van vehu. I blipped out when I was doing it. Okay, fine. But yes, that's in fact what he says. So that's nice, but it still doesn't explain what this is a hinder of. So I think Rashi, saying with Nimishuras Hadin, is fundamentally chesed, so I think you could say it's a hinder of chesed somehow. You're going above and beyond. But what Tosfos going to say? I think there is such a thing as hinder of din. The Gemara in Shabbos says, in Source Gimel, Kol dayan shedun din emes la'amito afilu sha'achas mala alabakasu kilu nasa shutav lagadosh baruch hu b'mayis avarashis. If a judge judges emes la'amito, truth for its truth, or in its truth, he's like a partner to Hashem in creation. I don't know what you're talking about. What is truth in its truth? What is that? So in Source Dalet, I gave you a table of classic views. One view is, and this is Tosfos in a couple of places, as well as the Marsha, it means arriving at the law via truth. You have a true process. The Beis Yosef says this as well. It's judging honestly without feelings of favor to one side or enmity for the other side. That's one approach. A second approach, also found in Tosfos, that is implementation of the law via truth. It's not about how you arrived at the law, MS via Mishpat via MS, but rather it's applying Mishpat in MS. That's MS Lamito. That you find as a separate idea in Tosfos and Shabbos, and the Prisha brings it. The third idea, though, is, and this is the one that's relevant for us, is the idea of bending the law in order to suit the needs of the case at hand. An idea discussed at length, you can look in the sources that I brought you there, the Drisha, the Sma, the Akedah. I brought you the Drisha specifically here on the sheet, because he is the one who mentions Lefnim Mishuras Hadin specifically. The Sma does as well, but as you know, the twins, so to speak. There's no point in bringing you the Drisha on the page and the Sma on the page. So if you take a look at source, hey, he says, this is a lot of fun. This is why I chose the Drisha version. He says, there are a lot more explanations for how it is that that Emes Lamito works. And I don't really need any of these other explanations for Emes Lamito, because what I've already told you, the Precious thing, that's really the truth, what I wrote in the Precious. However, now that I've told you there are explanations, but you don't need any of them, I'm going to bring you one more. And the one more that he brings is Shekavanas Lamashakasa Din Emes Lamito Ritzaloma Shadon Lefi Hamakom Vehazman. Emes Lamito means you judge based on the place and time you are in. Be'inyin Sheyehe La'amito, such that it will be for its truth, the truth of that occasion. Ulafuke shelo yifso tamid din Torah mamash. You don't always go by the letter of the law. Kilif amim shetzarech hadayon lifsok lifnim mishuras hadin lefi hazman v'ha'inyan. The judge has got to go lifnim mishuras hadin. Uksheinu osekin, if he doesn't do it, ashu din emes eino la'amito. That's emes, but it's not the emes of this case. Badel Shemu Chazal, Lo Nechrova Yushalayim, Ela Shemidu Dineim, Al Din Torah, Velo Lifnim Mishura Sadin. Like the line we saw last week about Metzia Lamed Amud Beis, Yushalayim is destroyed because they went with Din Torah, but they weren't supposed to. And then he goes on to say that when we say Lo Sasur, don't stray from what Chazal tell you, what the judge tells you, I should say, Yamin Usmol. Even if they tell you Yamin is small, small is Yamin. He says, why would they be telling you to go small instead of Yamin? What does that mean? And the answer is, because the needs of this case are such that we're going to flip everything on its head. That's the way that the law is in fact meant to work. So I think you could say that it's a hinder mitzvah of din. And it fits with the idea of the Rav on Pshara, which I brought you from the Nefesh HaRav in source Vav. Inyan HaPshara HaYaragi Rabbeinu LeVarshu Gamkin Psak Din. Compromise is also a Psak. Elishu Psak Shalifnim Mishuras Hadin HaMiyusad Al Piyosher. It is a Lifnim Mishuras Hadin Psak, based on what's right. The law does not say divide this sum of money that they're fighting about in half. Ella, rather, you go based on your sense of what's right. Who should win here? He says sometimes it can be 100% opposite what the law would have said. The law would have said, Reuven gets all the money. And Lifnim Mishuras Hadin says, no, Shimon gets all the money. That's the way it works. And he says, Ha'olam Regilim Lomar. He says, people like to say that there are two kinds of Pshara. There's Pshara Krova Ladin, and then there's Pshara Stam. Rabbeinu Omer She'enu Mevin Hevdel Zeh. He says, I don't understand what you're talking about. Kol Inyan Shal Pshara Yesodo Bekrad Ve'asisa Hayasher Ve'atov. That pasuk which we've already invoked. Shemechuyavim tamid linho kefi hayosher. You have to go based on what is yosher. Parentheses v'lefnim mishuras hadin. V'im kein zeh inyan gufa havi din ha-Torah. He says that is the rule. Now, one interesting ramification of this is that then lefnim mishuras hadin is really a law for the dayanim. Right? It's not the litigants. If the judge doesn't do it, it's not my problem. Unless we look at din as a communal mitzvah. If din, setting up shoftim and shotrim and everything else, is on the community, so maybe everybody communally has a lifnim mishuras hadin hider as well. But the formulation sounds like it's the judge's mitzvah. Ezer?
Even if people do have that mitzvah, and that's not really, like, how do you do that? Like, if the psak din already happened, like...
And the answer is, you go running... I mean, why isn't the answer? You go running after the guy to make things right with him. I mean, not if you're the loser, if you're the winner.
Yeah, but if you're the winner, I mean, is it worth it to be so sad that they're not half?
People do. Look at the case I brought you from the Chavos Yair last week, right, where the guy's suit is made.
Right.
So, yes. Okay. I brought you, Rav Sammy.
Just 2 points. One is, I guess, it's a little bit of a technicality, but I still don't understand how this falls into classic or mitzvah, which has to generally do with, like, unifying objects and the like. You can't make it beautiful, really.
Right. That's why I wrote quasi.
Right, okay.
Or quasi, however I wrote it.
Number two, I think even if we're in the road, there could be different applications of Sisa Vashar Atov Stasa, the Mishra Sadeh, meaning like there might be a certain application for Dayanim. But that's kind of discussing Pshara. Pshara is a specific application which certainly only applies to Dayanim, whereas it doesn't mean that, because it also Mishra Sadeh, which applies to a person, let's say, finds a lost object in, you know, Rav Lachem.
Right. So there will be two levels, or multiple levels, of Lifnei Mishur HaZadin, and this is describing Lifnei Mishur HaZadin for the Dayanim. I hear you. Okay. I brought you review questions on the sheet, but since we did the 8-minute review in the beginning of the shiur, I'm not going to now do the review questions as well. This is homework. Okay. So we get to Kefiyah. I can think of all sorts of reasons why we would force somebody to do Lifnei Mishur HaZadin, right? V'asisa hayasher v'hatov. We force people not to act like Sodom. We're going to come back to that idea. The pasuk of Asher Ya'asun, which Ya'asun le'asot can be to force someone to do something. Yerushalayim wasn't destroyed other than because, right? That makes, you know, Lifnei Mishur HaZadin a big deal. Did Emes Lamito, all these different things. Plus the language in some of our cases. The language in our Gemara sounded like Rav was saying, go do this. I'm forcing you. He sure didn't sound like he wanted to do it. And in Chavdalet, as Ezra noted a couple of weeks ago, and we'll see today from the Mordechai and the Bach, the Gemara in Daf Chavdalet, when he talks about finding an object in the marketplace and having to return it to its owner, even though it's a place where he would have given up hope, also it sounds there like he's saying it's an obligation. So how far do we go with this? With this idea that people have to do this, do we really compel someone to act Lifnei Mishur HaZadin? So there is a machlokas rishonim as to how far we go. We're going to see three different views: the Rosh, Rabbeinu Yehonah's son, and the Mordechai. We'll see the way the Ramah paskins within this machlokas. But after we have charted those views, we're going to come back and say there's a multi-layered debate as to what exactly they're debating about in the first place, in which it's going to sound like I'm saying the Rush says don't force. Rabbeinu Yonasan says force certain people. And the Mordechai says, nah, force them. But we're going to come back and say, actually, maybe everybody agrees that we force. It's just different layers or different options for forcing. And then after that, we have to discuss that there is the possibility that you force in particular circumstances depending on who the people are. Are they Hasidim, as we talked about last week? Are they people of status in society? Are they, you know, is somebody wealthy? Those are things we're going to have to talk about as well. So we have a lot, obviously, to go with here, but we'll do the best we can. So we begin on one poll with the Rush. The Rush does not like the idea of forcing people. I brought you in Sur Zion, the Rush on the Gemara about finding something in the marketplace and giving it back to the owner after Yeish, because the owner is screaming, wait, it's mine, look at what I underlined. V'lav d'kaifin alei, we don't compel him, d'ein kofin lasos lifnim mishuras hadin, which really, on the face of it, was probably the clearest way he could have said no. And yet, we're going to find out that we have a machlokes about it. But the Rush says no. He doesn't give any reason, right? He doesn't give any explanation. I could suggest it's because this fits the chesed model of Lifnei Mishur HaZadin, but I'd be making that up. He didn't actually say that. The evidence for it, the Yerushalmi on our Gemara, right, which did not say, when he said, is that the law? The response is not yes. So you know, that would suit it. Or actually, no, sorry, the Yerushalmi version doesn't even ask, is that the law? Right? In our edition, we noted that some didn't have him saying the word yes. And the fact, as we noted already last week, that in most of the cases, really, other than Pei Gimel and perhaps Chavdalid, it's about people deciding for themselves whether to do this or not. It's not about somebody coming to you and saying, you have to do this. And on Chavdalet itself, we have a machlokes, because Shmuel says, you have to return it, and Rav Nachman, we saw last week, says, no, you don't. So, you know, I could certainly support the position of the Rush to say no forcing, and in fact, the Knesset Yecheskel says, of course you don't force. Go to Source Ches. In source test, that was our money changer Gemara, in which Rabbi Chia is shown a coin. He says, yeah, this coin is fine. Turns out it was not fine, and he decides to pay up. And the answer was, he didn't really have to pay up. He was an expert. He was immune from prosecution. Nonetheless, Lifnei Mishur HaZadin. But in the course of the Gemara, when they ask, why did he have to pay? Look at what I underlined. Why is it, they ask, Umayshnad Danku v'Isser Dipatiri? Why would Danku and Isser, these two other expert money changers, or money examiners, they wouldn't have to pay. And our answer is he did lefnei mishuras hadin. So the Knesset Yecheskel says, huh, we wouldn't have forced Danku and Yisr to pay. So obviously that means lefnei mishuras hadin is not compulsory. Right? That's his basis. The Beis Yosef agrees. The Beis Yosef, which I brought you in source test, quotes Rabbeinu Yerucham, quoting the Rush, and the Beis Yosef sides with that, going on to say, and I don't understand the Mordechai, who is in a very different direction. We'll come back to that. But the Beis Yosef says, I think the Rush is correct. We do not compel. Rabbeinu Yehonasan, whom we've already seen talking about this as hinder mitzvah, takes the position that we do not compel unless you're a chassid. If you take a look at source Yud, he brought in the Shita Mekubetzes on Chav Dalet, he says, Nase ketzoveach ha-beiso shenafal. If the guy lost it in the marketplace, he lost the object in the marketplace, he's now going to lose it. But first he lost the object in the marketplace. There was Yeush, time went by, there were a billion people there. And then I find it, and the guy sees me, and now he loses it again. He's screaming and yelling at me. What do you mean? So the Gemara says, Nase ketzoveach ha-beiso shenafal. It's like he's screaming that his house has collapsed. Okay, that doesn't change anything. Too late. So the Rabbeinu Yonasan writes, he says, that's in Rav Nachman's line. That's when Rav Nachman says, don't return it. So Rabbeinu Yonasan says, Lemi she'eino kol kach adam chashuv, to somebody who's not a person of standing, so that we don't force him to go lefnei mishuras hadin. He says, if you're a chashuv, if you're an important person, then I'm going to make you return it, but otherwise not. Now, this is something we talked about a little bit last week, but now I want to revise the way we presented it last week. We're going to see if you noticed, his wording was somebody who is chashuv. He didn't say chassid, somebody who is of standing in the community. What we are going to find from the Tshuva's Kinyan Torah, which I'm going to come back to, is that he means specifically somebody who is chashuv. Somebody who is important. He doesn't mean somebody of great righteousness. Well, I'm going to prove it to you later on, but just know that. Rabbeinu Yonasan makes the argument to justify not compelling people in his statement that it's a hit or mitzvah, right? That we saw before. So of course I'm not going to force. Why would I force someone to beautify the mitzvah? Now, I'm not going to go into the hitter thing. We talked about the hitter thing already, but we're going to come back to more about the chashuv and the chassid in a little bit. Right now, just know one view is don't force. That's the rush. Rabbeinu Yonasan says you force certain people, the chashuv, the person of standing in the community. And then you get to the Mordechai. The Mordechai says open season. We're going to force them. Source Yud Aleph, he says, Matzah Chan, etc. He's talking about the case of the object found in the market. Amar lo, tarti. First, he asks Shmuel, what's the status of the object? And Shmuel said, Harayu Shalo, it's yours, you found it. Finders keepers. And then, he says, what happens if the guy is screaming? And he says, yeah, then give it to him. So he says, tarti. But you tell me two different things. First you told me I get to keep it, then you say I have to give it back. He says, yeah, you have to give it back. And he says, we find the same thing in Parakah Goes Abaster, the end of Bava Kama. I added it in the brackets. It's Kufi Chesam at Aleph, where somebody says, I stole something and I can't remember whether I ever gave it back. That type of a case. They have the same concept of Chayav Bivali De Shamayim. You have to return it if you want to satisfy Shamayim. I want to come back to that phrase. I'm not there yet. But he says, the key part is this. Since you see that we force people to do this, like in Bava Metzia Pei Gimel, our case with the porters, gam anan kaifin lemeavad lefnim mishuras hadin, we also compel to do it, im hayacholas biyado lasos, if he can do it. Let me pause and ask you a question. The words I underlined in Yud Aleph. If he has the ability to do it, who is he?
The individual.
The individual means who?
The person who would ever say paying out.
The person who's paying. In other words, if he's wealthy.
Yeah.
If he can afford it, we make him do it. That's one way to read it. How else could you read it?
I know what you're referring to, and I'm funny, and we don't think you can read it.
Okay.
The judge.
So, the judge. judge is the other one. We're going to see. It's a machlokas how to read this line in the Mordechai. I just want to make sure you see both right now.
No one reads these words in that way.
Okay, so this will be a machlokas between the Bach and the Tumim, right? The Bach says that it's what you wanted to say, that it's a limitation based on the giver's ability. We make him give it back if he has the ability to do so. The Tumim says that it's...
Rama also says that, by the way.
I'm sorry? Yeah, in a Hanami. I'm bringing you basics. I'm not... There are a few different... people you can bring on this. But yes, that's the Bach's position. The Tumim says that it's a limitation based on the Beis Din's ability to coerce. Honestly, from a logical perspective, you should take this Bach out. Tear it up. From a logical perspective. I found the object in the marketplace. What do you mean I don't have the Echoles to hand it back? This guy, he's standing right there. Because I'm an Ani, I don't have the Echoles to hand someone his own property? Who are you kidding? From a logical perspective, the Bach is absolutely not correct.
Which is a funny Echoles, but maybe he's really poor.
But when he still has the ability to give someone back his own property. He had the ability not to steal it from him in the first place.
What does ability mean?
That's what I want to know. I'm walking in the marketplace, not me, okay? Somebody is walking in the marketplace. I'm a good guy. I would always give it back. Somebody's walking in the marketplace, and he's down on his luck. He just lost his job. And he's walking in the street, and there's a gold watch on the ground. Oh! This is great! There's a gold watch! He runs to pick it up. Somebody's standing there and says, "That's my watch! Thank you so much for finding it!" He's going to say, "Well, I don't have the means to give this back to you? What are you talking about?" 5 minutes ago, you didn't have it.
I think you
could
say that you would have to give back in that case. And that's
his
raya from that specific case.
No, but he says you don't. Only
in my yecholas biyadolasos. Maybe you think that case is the case where it's always yecholas biyadolasos.
I'm sorry. Logic, I think, is with the Tumim, and grammar is with the Bach. That's the way I feel. In any case, he goes on to quote you all the importance of Lifnei Mishuras Hadin from the Gemara above Metzia Lamed Omid Beis. Mordechai's position is you force if he is capable, and again we'll come back to the Bach and the Tumim about who this exactly is. The reason for saying to force, well, it certainly fits a Din model. Right? However, I should note, you can't really do that. And the reason you can't do that is because he told you that he thought Pei Gimel was Lifnei Mishuras Hadin. Right? If you take a Din model, Pei Gimel is not Lifnei Mishuras Hadin. It's just a nice chesed thing. So that's the problem with saying that that's the reason for doing it. I don't know what his reason is for doing it. But the evidence is clear.
Maybe he learns our case as a Din model, like they've shown him. That we saw in the previous shiurim, that he just wanted to force him to swear, etc.
Right, so maybe it was you can make it sort of work along those lines if there's no pshia.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Really only Rashi is of that opinion.
Well, Tosos also. I don't know. But his evidence, and he doesn't give you logic, he just gives you evidence. He says, look at the Gemara, we forced him on Pei Gimel. The Mordechai thinks we forced him on Chav Dalet to return the Aveda as well. You have Asher Ya'asun and Lo Charva, which he quotes at the end in Yud Aleph. He says, the Gemara in Alamad Mabeis connects it to Asher Ya'asun, which either means it's important, or Ya'asun, like La'asot, to force, or because of Lo Charva, Yerushalayim was destroyed only for this. So that's his take. The Knesset Yechezkel and Aruch Chaim Zion adds a piece of support. He says, go back to the story of Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi in Bav Metzia Lamed Amud Beis. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is a zakein, right? He's an elder, he's a Talmud Chacham, he's walking along and he sees a guy with a bundle of wood. And the guy's having trouble with the burden. Rather than help him with it, he buys it off of the guy. And then makes it hefker. The guy sees he made it hefker, reclaims it, so Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi has to buy it off of him again. Right? Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi says, fine, I'm buying it off of you again, but I'm only making it hefker for certain people. It's not hefker for you. Which is not true. Right? It's not true. Hefker doesn't work that way. So Knesset Yechezkel says, I don't understand. If you're telling me that you're not obligated in Lifnei Mishur HaSadin, that we don't compel Lifnei Mishur HaSadin, why didn't he just decline to help instead of lying to him about how Hefker works? Right? What did you do? You just lied to him. Now, maybe you could answer, it's not really called lying, he just let the guy misunderstand, and it was for the sake of a mitzvah. But wouldn't it be just be easier, if it's not compulsory to do Lifnei Mishur HaSadin, then don't go through this whole game. You know? It's a valid point, I think. The Bach goes with the Mordechai. I brought you in source Gidbeis. Just read the words I underlined. Bal korchach sham inan dekofin al davar she'eno chayav bo min adin. He says, absolutely we force. He quotes you the Yasun thing. He quotes you the way that Pei Gimel with the porters went. He says, you have to return the item, and I'll come back to the other line that I underlined later. But he says, chayav lahachzir bebalatzis yidei shemayim. I'm going to come back to that. So what's the psak? I've got three Rishonim. The Rush says don't compel. Rabbi Yonason says compel an important person. And the Mordechai says, no, go ahead, compel people. So the Ramah quotes both views. In Source Yud Gimel, he says, Beis Din cannot compel people to go to Lifnei Mishur HaSadin, even if they think that it's right. That's the Beis Yosef quoting Rabbi Yeruch and quoting the Rush. And Yesh Chok and some disagree. So the Piskei Tshuva, in Source Yud Dalet, quotes in the Tshuvos Shev Yaakov, who says you do not compel. He says, first of all, the Bach only says to compel for the wealthy. That's one argument he makes. Second, he says, look at the Ramah's structure. That's what I underlined for you in your Dalit. He says, hello, Ramah, etik kol amin hagim. The Ramah brought all the practices. Again, where there is a known minhag, he says, and that's what we do. And here, v'kan hevi shtei deos. Here he brought two views. Dea achas bistam, v'achakach v'yishchok. And the first one he just brought, this is the law. And then he said, some disagree. V'yadua hechashakasav kein dea rishona hi'ikr. When you do that, the first view is the halacha. The second view is not the halacha. So he says, the Ramah is passing that way. He goes on to note that also the guy who found the object or the guy holding the money is muchzak, and he could say kimli, I follow the view that says that you don't coerce and he goes on to say, I don't really want batei din in our day to be coercing people. The Piskei Tshuva does add that maybe the Shev Yaakov would agree to verbal coercion. We're going to come back to that in a little bit, but the Piskei Tshuva believes that the Ramah is passing like the Rush. We do not coerce, and there's a raya to it in Source Tesvav. The Ramah talks about a case in which you rent a house. You're living in a house, you're paying rent for it, and during that time the landlord says, I'd like to make some renovations. So he says the landlord can't force you out, even to give you a better place to live. However, we ask you nicely to do it. Lifnei Mishur HaSadin. It would be nice if you could, so we don't compel. The Piskei Choshen quotes that in Chelek Dalet, Perek Hey Ha'arach HaBeis, as evidence that we don't compel. Okay, so we have. It is quoting the Mordechai. That's interesting. Yeah. I didn't notice that. I have to go back and take a look at that Mordechai, because that is interesting. I don't know. That's a good question. I wish I could say I'm going to get to look at that later, but I'm not so sure I'm going to. But you're right. It's an interesting point that he quoted in the Mordechai. That's not what I would have expected. Okay. So we thought we had a very clear machlokes here. Three Rishonim, the Ramah paskens like the Rush, don't compel people, and you're done. But now we have to go into the debate about how this Kofin debate works. The simple view is the way we've said it. Do we force or don't we force? But there's a second view that says no. Well, you really can't force anybody. The whole idea of forcing only means saying to the guy, be a good guy, this is what you really should be doing. That's it. The whole coercion the Mordechai is talking about is giving him a good talking to. And that's based on a Tosfos in Ksuvos. Tosfos in Ksuvos, the Gemara in Ksuvos I brought you on, Tezayin Amud Aleph, is talking about getting somebody to support somebody else via Asiya, this term for compulsion. And if you flip to source Yud Zayin, Rashi says, Asitinu, I forced them, Kafisosam Bechoska, with force. And Tosfos says, in your class, Hai Isui Tzarech Lomar Dainu Bedvarim. He says it's verbal. That's all it is. And he goes on to show you that. The Tosfos there says it's verbal. So the Tumim quotes this in Source Yud Tes. He says, I have news for you. There's no machlokis at all. Everybody agrees that you force verbally. That's what the Mordechai thinks, and that's what the Rosh thinks. And here's his argument. He says in source Yates, he says, first of all, the Mordechai wasn't really talking solid coercion. He says, B'chol raya shemevia Mordechai sham ein bo raya machraz. None of the Mordechai's proofs are actually proofs that a Beis Din can compel people. Further, he says, the Mordechai says, em yesh yecholes biyadenu. Instead of biyado, he says, we only do it if we have the ability to compel. It's only about our ability. He says that's the way to read what the Mordechai said. He made it based on our ability. I don't understand. Why is it depend on our ability? That's true in general for every psak you ever give. Whether it's Nimi Shuras Adin or Din, it's about whether you have the ability to enforce it. And it says, and the Bach, he says, said Yecholes means that he's wealthy. That's what the Bach said. He says, go back and read the Mordechai again. He says the distinction between wealthy and indigent only comes up later in the Mordechai. He doesn't state it at this point. That's the Tumim's argument, to which I would add once again. No, he says the distinction of wealthy and indigent only shows up later in the Mordechai. So therefore, don't read
it. Back to what he wrote earlier.
So he said that he's not what he's doing. He says this.
How does he explain this during the Mordechai then?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why does the Mordechai only say that in one case and not in the other?
Yes, I understand that question. But he says, absolutely not. That's not the way to read the Mordechai. What the Mordechai is saying is, we just tell the guy, be a good guy. Chayav atalasos kein. And if you don't listen, ata avaryon. That's it. And he says, concludes the line, what I underlined at the end, he says, the Rosh is going to agree to this too. There is no machlokes. Azoi shteit the tumim. Everybody agrees you compel verbally. I just referenced for you in Chof the Shvuz Yaakov. The Shvuz Yaakov doesn't actually discuss the Rosh, but he thinks also that the Mordechai is only saying verbal coercion. It makes it sound like the whole thing is really chesed. And therefore I can't force people, but I can say, be a nice guy. That's the limit of what I'm able to enforce. That's one pull. And then you have the opposite poll. And the opposite poll says, no, everybody agrees to verbal coercion. The debate is only whether you can do more than that. The Aruch HaShulchan in Chaf Aleph, what I underlined, Machlokasam Eina Ela Le'in Kfiya Gemura. The Machlokas is about really going to town on the guy. Avo B'Dvarim, but verbally? Hakom Odom Shetzrichim L'Chavo. Everybody agrees you have to do that. Lo Malo, Atam Achuyiv Lasas Lefnei Mishuras Adin. To say to him, you're obligated to act beyond the letter of the law. Divrei Tochacha V'Yis'oreruz Rachamim. Give the guy a Muster Shmuz. Everybody agrees, according to the Aruch HaShulchan. The Tzemach Tzedek Kadmon also took that position in source Chaf Beis. He says, I have news for you. The Rosh would even allow Shamta or going into the guy's property. He just won't allow beating him up. The Mordechai allows beating him up. There's a whole discussion that we're not going into in the Achronim as to whether it's worse to do Shamta or worse to go into his property. Which one is the worst penalty? I'm not going there in this shiur. But you now have three different ways to read the machlokes. I have a machlokes between, let's leave out Rabbeinu Yohanan, because he's really a separate point. But I have the Rosh versus the Mordechai. The Rosh says don't compel. The Mordechai says do compel. Either it's black and white like that, or the possibility is that it's a machlokes of whether to do just verbal according to the Rosh, or more than that according to the Mordechai, and the Tumim thinks there's no debate. The Tumim actually thinks there's no machlokes at all. Everybody's talking verbal. And then at the other end of it, you have the Tzemach Tzedek and the Aruch HaShulchan, who make the argument that no, this is actually a machlokes about going beyond verbal. Everybody agrees you do verbal. The only question is, will we go even further? Okay. Then you have the idea that compulsion is only done in particular circumstances, either for chassidim, or for chashuvim, or for the wealthy, or where the recipient is needy. So let's go through this. We already noted that if you require chassidim to do it, people of piety, that would explain why Rav would have forced Rabbi Bar Bar Chana to pay the porters, even if I don't believe in forcing in general. So the Shita Mekubetzes quotes Rabbeinu Yehonasan to use this idea to explain Rav Nachman's non-returning. In other words, how could Rav Nachman say you don't have to return the object in the marketplace? Shmuel Paskins, you do. So the answer would be, Rav Nachman is talking about normal people. But if you're a chassid, then you have to follow Shmuel's advice. That would be the idea. Sounds a little more like chesed than din, I would think. And the Kenyan Torah shows you where Rabbeinu Yehonasan got the idea. This is very sharp. Take a look at Source Chav Gimel, where I brought you the conversation between Rava and Rav Nachman in the second paragraph, right? The first conversation in Rav Yehuda and Shmuel. Shmuel says, return it lifnei mishur hasadin. Second paragraph in Chav Gimel. Rava is asking Rav Nachman in Shuka de Gildai, the marketplace of the leather workers. And some say, no, Shuka de Rabbanan is the rabbi's marketplace. So he says, the Kenyan Torah argues, Rabbeinu Yehonasan takes the first version, that this is in the leather market. And he says, leather work is not a great trade. Odds are the person who found it is a leather worker. He's not somebody of status within society. As opposed to the view that it's Shuka de Rabbanan, that's a different story. Because it's the leather worker's market, and it was found by somebody then who is not Silchashuv, therefore he's not obligated to return it. He doesn't have social standing. It's tied to your social standing. And the Kenyan Torah says, I'll support this from Halacha in Source Chav Dalet. Source Chav Dalet is talking about Dina de Bar Mitzvah. The Shulchan Aruch Hashem Mishpat Kufayin Hey talks about Dina de Bar Mitzvah, the rule that if I want to sell my property, I have to give right of first refusal to the neighbor. So that is Dina de Bar Mitzvah as a function of V'yaskisa HaYashar V'atov, right? We talked about that last week. So the Dina de Bar Mitzvah is a function of V'yaskisa HaYashar V'atov, and lo and behold, what does the Shulchan Aruch say? It doesn't apply to a woman, and it doesn't apply to a minor. If women and minors are involved, then there's no issue of offer it to the other guy first. Because they don't have, says the Kenyan Torah, social standing. It's a very interesting argument that he's making. I think you can argue it, but I think that's his idea. It's not being chashuv. Rav Sherman, in his article on the Fimishur Asadin and compulsion in Tchum and Chavdalet, footnote number 2, quotes others who think being a person of communal standing is what makes you do it. And I also note for you the Or Zeruah in Chesuris Chavhei, who says a Baal Nefesh has to do it. Has to return it. That's more chassid than chashuv, so I'm going to come back to that in a moment. But that's a view. Clearly the Rosh and the Mordechai are not on the same page here. This is a completely different perspective. That's okay. But here's my question. If the issue really is about being a chassid, being especially pious, why should a chassid have a special duty of lifnim mishuras hadin? What's the rationale of saying that a chassid should have to do it? So I think the answer may be the latzeis yedei shamayim argument, right? Going back to my shiurim on taromes in the beginning of the year, right? Thank you, Jeffrey, for remembering that and reminding me in an email. The latzeis yedei shamayim. You want to satisfy Hashem, so you want to satisfy Hashem. You have to go do this. The prisha, in fact, says that in Source Chavav. The prisha talks about an obligation also to do certain things. Just latzeis yedei shamayim in order to satisfy Hashem. We saw also that the Mordechai of the Bach, when we're talking about where you stole something and you're not sure who you stole it from, used the phrase, it was the Bach who used the phrase, Latzeis yedei shamayim. Where was that? Too many sources. Who was it who he quoted who said to go with Latzeis
yedei shamayim?
Source Yud Aleph said, Latzeis yedei shamayim. Oh, because I didn't underline it? I thought I had underlined it. All right. Oh, no, there it is. It's the Bach that I meant, in Yud Beis. Yeah, it was the Bach I meant in Yud Beis. Latzeis yedei shamayim. who quotes the Mordechai. Yes, he's quoting the Mordechai. So that's the idea is part of being a chassid is being someone who is yotzei yedei shamayim. So therefore, you have an obligation to do it. It also fits Rav's use of the pasuk of tovim and tzaddikim and all that. We want somebody better to do it. Okay, fine. What if it is the person who is chashuv who has an obligation? Well, then it's because, and this I said last week, because people are going to take a hint from the way that person conducts himself. So therefore, he has to be a proper role model for the community. I brought you in source Chav Zayin, the Adam Chashuv Sha'ani Lefi Shalom Eidin Emenu, because people learn from his conduct. Therefore, he has to be careful. I reproduced for you on the sheet, but I'm not going through it here, how the Drucker Goldberger article connects the idea for being a chassid to the Rambam and thinks that that's actually an idea of the Rambam. Fine. But this is... Sorry?
Wouldn't that idea also apply to a chassid as a role model to others?
Maybe, maybe not. Depends if it's a misnagdish community. Now, I hear you. Maybe. But lav davka. Lav davka. View number two is those who say to compel only mean that if you're wealthy, then we're going to compel you to... it's really not view number two, it's really view number three, I suppose. Or the others were 1A and 1B. Those who say to compel only mean to compel the wealthy. This is not about tzedakah. We're going to get to tzedakah in number four. It's about the porters in our. It's not about the porters being needy. That's a case that we're going to get to. This is saying if you are wealthy, it's not going to cost you. Then do it. Do lifnim mishur asadin. Right, taking the box suite of the Mordechai yechol es biyado means you are somebody of means. The Ketos Achoshen takes this position in source Lamed Beis lifnim mishur asadin eino ela lemisha. He clearly is siding with that read in the Mordechai that it means somebody who is wealthy. And the Bach says, why? I underlined it in Lamed Gimel because Kofen Amidas Sodom. We force people not to act like Sodom. Unless you are suffering a loss in this case, and you are an indigent person, you have no business saying no. The Tzemach Tzedek supports this as well in source Lamed Daled, Aval Pi Shabala Avedahu Ashir. Even if the person who lost it is wealthy, I don't care. It's not about the status of the recipient. It's about the status of the person who is being called upon to act. Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. That's the idea. And here I come back to the Kenyan Torah and his read of that Gemara on Chavdal Adam and Beis. This is so sharp. He says the other view was that it wasn't the market of leather workers; it was Shukat Rabbanan, the market of rabbis. So the Kenyan Torah argues that that's the point here. The rabbis are not merchants, he says. The rabbis are broke. The person who lost it, on the other hand, was wealthy. He had a big wallet. But the rabbi doesn't have a big wallet. Therefore, Rav Nachman says, you don't have to return it. Because you're not somebody of wealth. That's the idea that the Kenyan Torah reads into the Mordechai. It's very sharp. And he supports it also by pointing to Dina de Bar Mitzvah and Lamed Hay. He says, the rule there is, Bar Mitzvah does not apply to Hekdesh La'aniyim, to property that was dedicated to the needy. Why? Because they don't have to do it. We're not kofa them on Midas Sodom. That's his idea. The Yad Malachi says that's consistent with the Ramah as well. The Ramah deals with a case in which you found this object in the marketplace and you want to return it even after, or you don't want to return it, but Yeish has already taken place. And the Ramah says in source Lamed Vav, Imhu Ani Ubala Veda Asher, the parenthesized words, if the person who finds it is needy and the person who lost it is wealthy, then you don't have to go with Nimishur as I did. Now, I would have taken that to mean, or I could have taken that to mean, that the emphasis is on the recipient. He's wealthy, you don't have to give it back to him. The Yad Malachi says no, in source Lamed Zayin. He says, Lifnei Mishuras Hadin, Mashmach on the Ramah, Delo Shayach Rak Ba'ashir. He thinks the Ramah is telling you that the person doing it is only obligated in the event that he is somebody of means. But the Ramah says we don't compel. Yeah, we don't compel. But but nonetheless, the expectation is still that you're going to do it if you are a person of means. And this is the position of the Shach in Rishon, in Choshen Mishpat Rishon and Tes Gimel as well. So we're only kofeh the wealthy. If I can take one more minute just to conclude this, and then I'll record the rest afterwards. The rest is just concluding notes. But the fourth view is that we only compel if the recipient is needy. That's what we're going to compel. I think there's basis for this in the Pisrei Choshen in Chelek Gimel Perikhes Ha'ara Pehei, when he says Rav's ruling of you have to return it was because the porters needed the money for their survival. It's because they are aniyim. But I think at this point, this really becomes Chesed / Tzedakah, right? Like the Prisha said on the tour, that the obligation to give them back their coats is one step, and then separately paying the salary is chesed, right? Which we then played out in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav as well. And if you see the Aruch HaShulchan, this is really what I wanted you to notice in source math. Look at the Aruch HaShulchan. Mashma b'gemara shadayin mechuyav lomar lo kach. The Gemara says that the judge is obligated to say to him, say what to him? Shemei aroi lasos kein, that it's good to do this. It's appropriate to do it. V'yomer lo de'af de'lav midinahu. This is not the law. Omnam anoshim tovim v'sedikim osim kein, but good people would do this. That's what Rav was doing in the Gemara with the pasuk from Mishlei. Telling him, no, this isn't the law. But be a good guy. The Aruch HaShulchan says you have to actually tell him that this is not the law, it's simply lifnim bishuras hadin. Why? Because it's just chesed. You're not allowed to warp din and pretend that this is actually din. And I think this solves the problem that I mentioned last week, where if your own Unger in his article is very angry. What about Vidalo Sehedar Barivo? The Pasuk says you're not allowed to favor the indigent. The Gemara Ksuvos Peidal says, Ein Rachman Bedin, you're not allowed to be merciful in din. Yeah, that's true. But that's the point. The din here is at most about the usher's responsibility of not to do midas sedom that I mentioned in our third view. Not about the duty to help an ani. The duty to help the ani is just chesed. It's not din at all. It's not the nimshuras din. It's simply chesed. That's all that is. And therefore, you're not violating the vidalos darbarivo. That's the idea. So what we've shown, hopefully, is some degree of clarity. Number one is hider mitzvah of din. The quasi del Raisa, and number two, three different views of the Rishonim. The Rush's position, don't coerce. The Mordechai's position of do coerce. Rabbi Yonasan in the middle saying coerce if somebody is an important person. We then noted that something that the Rush and the Mordechai actually are having a different thing. Either there's no machlokes, that's the Tumim. They all agree. We compel verbally. That's one possibility. Another possibility is they all agree you do verbally and the Mordechai wants you to do even more than that. I don't know, I had one more view, right? The one more view is the simple one. It's either that we force or not, or it's that forcing is verbal, or it's that there's no debate at all between them. Everybody agrees verbal, or it's that everyone agrees to verbal, and the Mordechai wants you to do more than verbal, whether that's physical, whether that's taking his money, whether it's excommunication, fine. And then the idea that you would be kofeh in particular circumstances. Somebody is standing, somebody of piety, let's say Sidei Shamayim, somebody who is wealthy, and therefore it's midas sedom for him not to, or it's just a nice chesed thing. It's a chesed thing that we're doing. So what I'm going to do at this point is record separately just a very short note on why we have such a thing called the Lifnim Yishuras Hadin at all, and I'll send out a link to that. It'll be like a 3-minute or 5-minute recording. Okay? Thank you very much.